Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Hey, y'all. Welcome to another episode of the Hardy Wrestling Podcast with your girl, Stephanie Hardy. If this is your first time listening, welcome and thank you for joining the ride. And if this isn't your first time listening, thank you for continuously supporting me and the show. So, of course, in this episode, I've got your news and gossipish, and so much has happened within the past 2 days. And we're going to go into all of that here. And I've got a special interview with Manny Matotti and Jason Cosmides, who are responsible for recording the infamous curtain call incident involving Triple H, Shawn Michaels, Sean Waltman, Scott Hall, and Kevin Nash 25 years ago this week. So, if you're ready to sink your teeth into this special episode of the Hardy Wrestling Podcast, chill out, get you like a cup of tea or something, but because this is probably one of the best interviews I've ever done. So sit back, relax, and listen to the Hardy Wrestling Podcast. Okay, so in news and gossipish today, there is so much going on, even within the past few hours, that we're going to discuss. So I just want to go into it right now. Today, we got word, actually yesterday into today, we got word of NXT releases. Of course, a few weeks ago, close to the day a year ago where WWE released a whole bunch of people due to budget cuts during the first half of the pandemic, they released people along the lines of Samoa Joe, Mickie James, and so many others, right? So starting yesterday, they made some NXT releases as well. And some of them are very devastating, while others have been kind of, yeah, everyone was kind of rooting for those to happen. So the first person I'm going to talk about is Jessamyn Duke, who was part of the Four Horsewomen of the MMA, along with Shayna Baszler, who is a two-time NXT Women's Champion, and I believe at this point a two-time two-time WWE Women's Tag Team Champion alongside Nia Jax. Ronda Rousey, who's a former Raw Women's Champion who hasn't been active, you know, in the past couple of years and is now pregnant with her first child. Congratulations to her. And Marina Shafir, who is also married to Roderick Strong. And really, we haven't really seen any of the other two horsewomen on NXT television in such a long time. And it's just kind of weird because one of the things that a lot of the fans were pushing was the fact that they wanted, you know, a four horsewomen battle between Charlotte Flair, Sasha Banks, Becky Lynch, and Bayley, you know, to go up against these four horsewomen since they were all in WWE at certain points. But it's looking like they're not going to do that, and they've let Jessamyn Duke go. I believe the last time we even saw Jessamyn, it had to have been on Raw Underground. Y'all remember that? So, yeah, like, now she's been cut. Vanessa Bourne has also been released, and she used to be a dancer, I believe, for an NFL team. I think it was the Arizona Cardinals. And I remember the first time I saw her, it was at the first NXT live show that actually came to Birmingham at the BJCC. For those who are from Birmingham, who knows what that is. And I thought she was really pretty. You know, I thought she was, you know, really nice on the eyes and she had the potential to grow. But then it's just like, we hadn't really seen her that much. We maybe saw her maybe twice on television. And then after that, she was just gone. And she would post on Instagram every now and again. But really, we didn't see that much from her in terms of wrestling. And I almost thought that she was going to make a comeback when they had that puppy, you know, running on NXT, giving the preview of what turned out to be Frankie Monet, who formerly was Taya Valkyrie from TNA and Impact. So now she's gone. Vanessa's gone. And Alexander Wolfe is gone. And that was really surprising to me because Imperium, you know, he was in Imperium, but then they beat up on him. The other two members beat up on him this past week on NXT and then basically wrote him out. So, and basically called him the weak link of Imperium. So now Imperium is just of Walter and Marcel Bartel and Fabian Aichner. And it's so sad because Alexander Wolfe kind of made a little bit of a comeback with Imperium because Sanity basically got dismantled. And really the only people left from what Sanity used to be is Nikki Cross and Killian Dane, because now Alexander Wolfe's gone and Eric Young has been released from WWE and now he's back in Impact. So now Alexander Wolfe is gone. So he alluded that on Twitter, there's so much more that he wants to say, but then can't really say right now in terms of his plans for continuing his wrestling career. But we wish all of these people the best. Now we're going to talk about the more notorious releases that happened last night into today. Drake Wirtz, I believe is what his name was. He was referee at NXT for a long while. And his rap sheet was really, really long. And a lot of people on social media were really happy that he got released last night. And this is all along the lines of him sort of being problematic here. One of them was the fact that he refused to wear a mask. It was reported that he refused to wear a mask in the performance center. And it was also reported that he was suspended earlier this year and banned from the Capitol Wrestling Center for a time. And somebody found screenshots of him last November being a supporter of the Proud Boys and QAnon. And if you do watch the news, you do know who these people are. I won't get into it on here, but just know that it's really problematic that you're a part of that, you know, you would follow these hateful groups or whatever. And he also brought more heat upon himself after trying to weasel his way into certain roles backstage. And he also had multiple issues with people of color in the company and almost got into a fight with EJ Nduka, whose real name is Ezra Judge. And I believe he also got released too. So the last straw that for me that really kind of just hit it for me was when they reported that Triple H was giving a speech about Black Lives Matter last year, talking about different races and religions being welcomed into WWE. He reportedly aggressively gathered his stuff and left, and he was really critical of any wrestlers who decided to get the COVID-19 vaccine. So needless to say, this guy was just a pretty hateful person, and he was very problematic. And when when the reports started coming out earlier before he got released, I was wondering, you know, if there was some way, shape, or form of which he could possibly, you know, allow other wrestlers of color to get put in danger. And I would watch for that on television, but then again, that would never happen on TV. So, but at the very least, you know, we don't have to worry about that happening now because he's gone. And then today, it was breaking news a couple of hours ago that the Velveteen Dream, aka Patrick Clark, has been released from WWE. And his is definitely notorious in the idea that he got caught possibly sending inappropriate pictures to underage girls. And since then, you know, he was kind of off and on television. He was kind of on TV sometimes, but then off TV for another time, then back on TV because he was hated and stuff like that. And he had turned heel to being back off TV permanently. And the last time anybody saw him, it had to be probably around November or December of last year. And he had basically just been benched. So now it's official. He's released now. And it's such a shame that you got caught up in the okey-doke, because he was one of the favorites that a lot of fans really loved him. He was one of the favorites to get called up to the main roster at some point, or to possibly win the NXT championship at some point. He was an NXT North American champion. Like, there was so much potential that he had, considering that he really came from Tough Enough, and he was known as one of the most arrogant people on the show, but he knew that he was really good, and he knew what he had to offer was good. And then when he created this character, it was like, you know, him being this androgynous character, it was one of the best androgynous characters that WWE ever had, but he got caught up, so now he's gone. And it's really a shame when so many people get released at a time, because you want the best for all these talented people, but ultimately, you know, it's not up to us as fans. It's always up to, you know, the business, because at the end of the day, WWE, you know, they may really care about these people, but at the end of the day, it's a business, so you have to cut your losses. And I really hope the best for some of these least problematic people who got released. Now, the other problematic ones, goodbye. So, yeah. Also in the news, we have Las Vegas being a lead candidate for SummerSlam to take place. And it was reported by Dave Meltzer, who we sort of take as, you know, somebody who has news but with a grain of salt, because he doesn't necessarily have like the best, you know, confirmation of things. He confirmed that Allegiant Stadium in Paradise, Nevada is the leading candidate to host SummerSlam this year. And it was also stated via the Wrestling Observer that the stadium is the home of the NFL's Las Vegas Raiders, who is my boyfriend's favorite football team. And then Sports Illustrated's Justin Barraza reported on Thursday that it will take place in Nevada this August, but didn't exactly state which city or which venue was going to be hosting the event. So it's also being reported that they're going to have a live crowd there as well, just like they did for WrestleMania this year. And it's also reported that Money in the Bank is supposed to be held in Texas with a live audience as well. So it was reported last month that they're going to try to get back to touring, maybe. So I feel like this might be a good start to sort of start with some of your bigger pay-per-views first and then ease into touring, because, of course, COVID is still a very real thing. Even though people are getting their vaccines and stuff, you know, it's still good to be safe. So I think it's cool that at the very least they're trying to give people something. So if that's the case, then that's really cool that you're having, you know, SummerSlam in a place like Las Vegas, you know, where there's so much to do. There's all this, there's the strip, there's the glamour of all the casinos and stuff. So I think that's amazing. Also in the news, we have Jazz talking about possibly going into the WWE Hall of Fame. I was actually lucky enough to meet Jazz this past weekend at the Belladonna Division show Genesis. She is such a nice woman and she's just so talented. I'm lucky to even be breathing the same, to even have been breathing the same air as her, and even commentating a tag team match that she participated in with The Woad as her partner up against Heather Monroe and Ray Lynn. Like, shout out to those girls. I was so happy to have met her. She's so nice. So she talked to the Angle podcast and she discussed, you know, possibly taking her place in the Hall of Fame. And she said that it's something that she would like to be a part of while she's still here on this earth. And she's quoted as saying, "Me being a Hall of Famer for WWE, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if that will ever happen. I just want to say this. If it's ever going to happen, do it while I'm alive. Don't wait until I'm dead and gone. I would like to be there and share that moment with my kids. Don't bring my kids up on the stage with tears in their eyes, wishing their mom was there to receive this. Give me my flowers while I live. Don't let me die and be forgotten about. And then, oh yeah, here. if it were to happen, I would love to be inducted by Paul Heyman. And it's good that she said that, because in terms of Paul Heyman, he brought a lot of people into the wrestling business, and he's also responsible for bringing her through ECW, which was his baby, you know. And while she was at ECW, she joined the Impact Players alongside Lance Storm, Justin Credible, and Jason Knight. And then she left the company before it filed for bankruptcy. And she competed in WWE from 2001 to 2004, where she faced Hall of Famers such as Lita, Trish Stratus, Molly Holly, and Jacqueline. And, you know, she made all kinds of history, and she is one of the reasons why we even have women like Sasha Banks and Bianca Belair and so many other black female wrestlers doing their thing all across the indies and stuff like that. So I would love for WWE to actually give her flowers while she's here, because they do be giving women, you know, Hall of Fame stuff when they're not here, you know, when they've passed on. And I would love for her to give her speech and tell her story, you know, from her perspective. So that would be really, really cool. I would actually say that maybe Teddy Long should induct her into the Hall of Fame, but that's just me. So yeah, that was a cool thing to see, and I'm just really happy to have actually met her. If you want to see the picture we took together, you can look on my social medias and check that out. That was amazing, and I'm going to talk more about that in my next episode. So also in the news, we have Thea Trinidad, formerly known as Zelina Vega, possibly returning to the main roster in WWE. So it was reported by Sean Ross Sapp of Fightful Select that she might be returning to WWE, because they saw her reportedly returning to the Performance Center. No one knows why exactly. She may be making a return. She might have been bringing Aleister Black something, because he's set to make his return to the ring pretty soon with all of his vignettes at SmackDown and stuff. Or she could be, you know, recording stuff for some type of documentary of sorts that there might be doing on Simone Johnson. That's what the rumors are. So according to Steve Carrier of Ringside News, she might be returning to the main roster and not just going through NXT. And no one knows if she's going to come back as a performer, as a wrestler, like she was before she got fired last year, or if she's going to be a manager for Aleister Black. I mean, either way, I feel like she has the personality and the fire and the talent to do it. And if she truly is coming back, I'll be so happy, because I miss her. Like, I seriously miss her. Like, I loved me some Zelina Vega, and I've talked about it multiple times on the show. So if she's returning, then please let her return. Please make her come back. Speaking of Simone Johnson, The Rock's daughter, she's reportedly making great progress at the Performance Center, as she trains for her eventual debut. She was reported as being the most improved developmental talent in squats for a period of January up until May of this year. And it was reported that the second most improved in squats was Skylar Story. But she had just been released, you know, yesterday as well. And it was reported that she, you know, began training at the Performance Center and that she had signed a contract. So I think it's really cool that she's the first fourth generation person to wrestle for the WWE at this point, because she comes, of course, from a long line of amazing wrestlers in terms of the Maivias, and also in terms of, you know, The Rock and his father as well. So I'm all for supporting women of color wrestlers, and she definitely represents, you know, two different, you know, races in terms of being black and Samoan. So I'm really happy for her, and I'm glad that she's making great progress. And lastly on the docket for news, we have AEW Rampage, you know, to debut on TNT on August the 13th, and AEW Dynamite moving to TBS in January of next year. So All Elite Wrestling announced that they're going to create a new television show, a new television show called AEW Rampage that will debut on TNT on August the 13th at 10 p.m. Eastern. And that's a Friday, I believe. And it's going to be an hour-long show and is going to join Dynamite as AEW's second weekly television show. And Dynamite, which has been on Wednesday nights on TNT since it started, is going to be moving to TBS starting next year. So additionally, AEW is also going to have 4 new professional wrestling specials annually on TNT. So Patrick Hypes from Deadline talked to Tony Khan, the CEO of AEW, following the forthcoming additions and changes. So he said, as a lifelong wrestling aficionado who's privileged to present AEW to longtime and new fans alike, it means a lot to me, personally and professionally, to share the news that AEW will call TBS home beginning in 2022. The history of wrestling in the United States cannot be told without acknowledging the contributions of TBS, which as WTBS years ago, delivered wrestling to the Southeast and eventually to a massive national audience. TBS has the same passion for wrestling today, but will offer AEW and our fans more primetime programming, content, and global opportunities that will establish TBS as the world's undisputed destination for wrestling. And it's also interesting that Rampage is going to come on Friday nights after SmackDown goes off. And this isn't me trying to be really messy or trying to stir a pot or whatever, or, you know, do a whole war thing, because Triple H has definitely said, you know, that there was no war going on or whatever between AEW and WWE. But there's someone in the AEW circle who has a tendency to talk about WWE and talk about, you know, how AEW sent NXT running to a completely different night in terms of Tuesdays. And I just feel that if you feel like AEW has all this smoke, then if you were going to put a show on the same night as a WWE show, why don't you just put them on at the same time just so you could see exactly how they could go in terms of the main roster show like Raw or SmackDown? But I guess they didn't want to do that. They just wanted to put it afterwards. So I guess maybe they really don't want any type of smoke at all, or they just want to just do something different. I don't know. So AEW is going to have more and more stuff going on, and that's a good thing for people who are huge fans of AEW. So that's going to be good for them. And that's all for news and gossipish. And now we're going to go to my special interview with Monty Mutati and Jason Cosmetas, the Curtain Call Kids.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
All right. So in this special interview for the Hardy Wrestling Podcast, I have two very special guests on the 25th anniversary of their curtain call video being recorded. We have Manny Mutati and Jason Cosmetas. How are you guys doing?
Hey, Stephanie. Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you for having us.
Great.
We're good.
Great. So I'm going to ask you a question that I ask all of my guests, and that's, when did the both of you fall in love with wrestling?
For me, it was 1987, and been watching since. It's been a lifelong dream of mine just to be a wrestling fan. I mean, that was like my biggest passion in life, was just wrestling. and everything about it, inside and outside the business as well.
And for me, I would probably say around the same time. I remember my first memory of watching pro wrestling was like Saturday night's main event. I remember seeing like Andre and Hogan, and I just became just hooked on it after that. And that's how far I go back.
Okay. So who were some of your favorite wrestling stars, you know, growing up as you were watching it back then?
Well, for me, I would say the Hulk, you know, Hulk Hogan, Ultimate Warrior, you know, Demolition, Mr. Perfect. Who else? Let's see. You know, and then it became you know, the new generation, like Bret the Hitman Hart, Diesel, Kevin Nash, Razor Ramon. That's those are the ones that stick out for me. What about you, Manny?
Well, obviously, you know, of all time, Shawn Michaels. But if you go back, Demolition, of course, you know, Rick Rude, Ted DiBiase, Macho Warrior, you know, Jake. I mean, you can't forget that. Most of the guys from the 80s, but if, you know, start going in the 90s, you know, Mike Awesome, you know, just about everybody in ECW.
Okay, so those are pretty solid favorites there. It's like you sort of mentioned the who's who of basically people, a lot of people that would be recognizable amongst, you know, various fan groups and just people who aren't even really like fan things, you know, so those are really solid choices there. So were your family members ever into wrestling at all, or was it just a you guys thing?
Well, me and my brother used to go to shows a lot, and then Jason became my new brother, and we started going to shows a lot. And my dad used to take me to ECW events, and then me and Jay used to go to ECW events, as well as WWF and WCW shows.
Yeah, no, for me, it was just me and my house. I think I tried to get my brother involved with it, but no, he wasn't interested. And then, you know, I went to a few events. Obviously, I was young, so, you know, my dad went. And then as it got older, I went with my friends, you know, met Manny in high school, and we started going to house shows, and he introduced me to ECW, went to ECW, and pay-per-views, and yeah, that's pretty much my history with going to events and being a fan.
Okay, so you guys mentioned how you went to ECW shows. Were those pretty wild? Because from what I see from different old clips and stuff, those shows were kind of crazy. So how were your experiences with ECW shows?
My first ECW show was February 3rd of 1996 in Queens, New York. Me and my dad, we brought a bag, of course, of beer, a boxing glove, light bulbs, some other weapons that you were allowed to bring in at the time. And, you know, a couple of the wrestlers did actually use some of the stuff that was in our bags, which is awesome, because that's what I saw that they were doing in Philly. And I was like, you know what, let's do that. You know, let's bring in all these weapons and see if they use it, which they did. And it was such an amazing experience seeing all those guys, because when I was going to those shows, I was like, oh, I know these guys from the 80s. I know these guys were in the WWF or WCW, and now they're here. This is cool, you know? Mm-hmm. Shane Douglas is here. You know, it's like, oh, awesome.
Wow. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah. As far as like ECW goes, I mean, Manny introduced me to ECW as like an alternative wrestling product. And I was just so hooked on it. I was so fascinated that the edginess, as wild as it was, the reality based, it seemed, the music was real. They played real hip hop. They played real rock. They didn't make their own music. It was real music heard on the radio. And it was just an awesome experience. When we went to our first show, is the best way I can describe it. And you know, you gotta understand, times were a lot different back then. I mean, It was like going to a wrestling event and a rock concert at the same time. And the wrestlers would you know, get in the crowd, and it's like you were part of the show, like, you know. And it took a couple of years for WWF and WCW to kind of catch on to that fans actually enjoyed that stuff, you know.
Yeah, that just sounds really cool to actually be a participant, you know, in the audience, you know, in that mm-hmm. way. So I imagine it has to be a beautiful time to sort of reminisce on and sort of remember, because of course, you know, one of the only ways that some of us can really only, you know, interact, well, now because of the pandemic, is right. through, you know, being a part of the audience digitally. But then even when stuff was normal, it's like we would do certain chants and sometimes the wrestlers will react and stuff like that. But it wasn't ever anything that much interactive, you know, for fear of, you know, different things popping off and different things happening. Because some fans can get a little bit wild and, you know, jump in the show and stuff like that. Yeah. So it's cool that you guys had that experience. So how many wrestling events would you say you guys had went to before the one that subsequently changed your life?
You mean together or just in
together
general?
Or in basically together?
Well, I met Manny in 1994. I was going to the house shows with another high school friend of ours, and Manny and I started going. I want to say we started going to some events at MSG in late 1995. Mm-hmm. And then we went to a few shows. That's when I started to record a few of the house shows to bring the camcorder. I'm sure we'll get more into that. But and then there was I would say about maybe three or four house shows around the New York area that we went to. And you have to understand, at that time, nothing really happened much at house shows. Anything that would happen, like title changes or heel turns, would usually happen on TV. The house shows were kind of a tour, you know, they would go from city to city, so you'd really didn't see much. And I think at some point, I don't know, at some point Manny was like, you know, why are you taping this for? Nothing happens, you know this, you've been to these shows, nothing ever happens, you know.
It's, you're wasting your time.
Your time.
What are you doing? This same results every night, and the title changes, and then a minute later goes back to the person, you know. It's like, it's a house show, what do you expect? Stop doing this, you know, it's not worth it.
You're risking yourself getting caught and taking your camera away, you know.
And I'm glad he didn't listen to me, because otherwise we wouldn't be here. If he would have listened to me, then I would have, you know.
Yeah. And it's so funny, because even when you go to house shows now, so I was just telling Jason earlier, Manny, that I'm from Birmingham. And so whenever yes. house shows come here, you know, it's still cool to go see, you know, even though, you know, it's not the live television show. But at the same time, it's like, you know, that basically nothing major is going to change, except maybe a couple of times. Like, it's been a couple of times in more recent years where stuff has changed, you know, and titles have changed and stuff like that. But it's really, right. really rare.
Right.
So it's just, you know, it's just really cool. You know, I actually enjoy going to house shows. And I really just miss live shows, period, at this point. Like, I cannot wait until everything sort of, you know, gets back to normal so we can start going to live shows again, because those are just my favorite things to
yeah.
do.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. You, yeah. You're saying you and everybody else. So believe me, once they can start filling the seats, yeah, they're going to have sold out. Shows, no doubt about that. A lot of people miss that.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I was happy to see live fans at WrestleMania this year, even though mm-hmm. it was so few and stuff like that. But it's just the principle of just seeing them there, like, that was really good. Like, that, yeah, that made me feel
the fans
happy.
Mean a lot. The fans mean a lot. I mean, even before the pandemic, some of the shows were piped in crowd noise. I couldn't get with that. now it's like, okay, you're invited to Thunderdome. You can do this. You can do this. You can't do that. Can't do that. There's 10 things you can't do. You can't wear this type of shirt. You can't do this on camera. This, and otherwise they'll just boot you. You have to cheer for who they want you to cheer. You have to boo for who they want you to be. Boo. It's like, oh man, that's too much. There's too much to take in.
Yeah, it's a lot. I feel, you know, good about the idea that at least there is still trying to find ways to include us and still make it fun.
In some way.
All right. So I wanted to ask you, had you both known the existence of the clique before the moment happened that you guys caught on camera?
Not at all. I mean, the only...
No.
The only thing we saw is what was on TV with Razor and Diesel being friends, and Sean and Diesel being friends. Just what we saw on camera. Nothing about Hunter anyway. And I had a 800 hotline back then, and I had no idea that Hunter was friends with all of them. And I had to know everything back then because I had to update the hotline every day. And no, we had no idea.
Okay, so what type of hotline was this? Because you mentioned that, and I don't exactly know what that is, because around that time, I was like maybe 2 years old. So what was that?
Back then, it was, I started around like 96. It was an 800 hotline, which I had three lines. One was a 1-800 news line. The other one was a question and answer hotline where the fans call in and then I answer their questions. And then the third one was a merchandise hotline where they can buy tapes or VHS copies for me for certain shows. And it got pretty popular because I actually got the number on Raw on a sign when I was in the front row, and that helped it out a lot too. Back before back then we had basically just wrestling hotlines where you would call into, or dirt sheet writers. Now it's all, you know, podcasts, and I love the way it's coming to, and the internet news sites. But that's what we had back then. Those were the only two choices, with the hotlines and the dirt cheap writers, where you would sign up and you get it in the mail, all the news that's happening.
Yeah, and most of the time when we got them, it was late. You know?
Yes,
like
that's
stuff
thing.
Already happened. It's like we're reading it, and it's like, what, wait, we already know that you know they're telling us the Raw results, you know, the Superstar results, because they already happened. You know, because a lot of the times they did the recordings and or tapings, and it was like weeks out. So.
Okay, so if that was the case, then is it safe to assume that you guys may or may not have known that Scott Hall and Kevin Nash were leaving WWE to go to WCW?
Well, and a weird story, which I know Scott Hall never has admitted, and I know Kevin Nash hasn't admitted. You know, Scott Hall says his 90-day clause he gave, which would have been February or whatever it was. But I used to call Howard Finkel's wrestling hotline, and he used to update house shows when this wrestler is appearing here and there. Mm-hmm. And randomly he blurted out, oh, Scott Hall and Kevin Nash are assigned to WCW. And it was just out of random, because he would never give that kind of information out. Not only that, nobody knew their real names at the time, but I did, because I had a wrestling hotline, so I had to know everything. And all this time, and this was back in January. So February, March, April, May, that's like 5 months. I know these guys are selling out, they're leaving us, and I'm so pissed. And like, I knew they were going to be jobbed out over the next months, and I see what's going on. And so I knew it for a long time. I mean, Scott Hall has always said he gave his 90 days, but it was more than that, because I believe Howard Finkel's word was true.
Hmm. Wow, that's a lot. So can you both describe how the both of you felt that night when you watched the clique embrace each other that night in 1996.
Jay, you want to go first?
Yeah. Shocked. You know, I was definitely shocked because wrestling back then was very black and white, good guy, bad guy. You never saw them shaking hands after the match. it just was just out of the ordinary, you know, and hugging, kissing in the ring, and we're like, what the hell is going on? And you know, then you see Hunter come in, you see Razor, and they're doing this click sign, and it was just shocking, you know. And we were just, I mean, Manny was definitely, if you heard, he had the true raw react, you know, raw emotion that a lot of us were feeling that night, you know.
I mean, the annoying kid, the annoying screaming kid.
Yes. Now, I won't say you were being annoying, though, because I won't say that, because I probably would have reacted the same way. So I can't even pretend that I'm not loud. So it's okay.
It was actually magical, because usually I'm not that vocal. I'm usually a shy person. But that whole card was amazing. I mean, it was magic. Going into it, we didn't think much. It was just, okay, cage match, Shawn Diesel. But, you know, you had Steve Austin going up against Jake Roberts. And you had, that's when he was starting to become Stone Cold Steve Austin. You had the return of the Ultimate Warrior at Madison Square Garden facing Owen Hart, which happened to...
He broke his wrist.
Yeah, that's why you see him wear his cast all the time after that, because of that shoulder tackle that the Warrior gave him. It was the night the tag team titles changed and stayed changed at the Garden. And
that was on Raw the next day.
But that was pure emotion, you know, because it just mind blew me. Not just when it's like face turn, heel turn, when Diesel lost, he was a heel, and then a couple seconds later, Michaels embraced him. Okay, so here you go, Kevin Nash. Now he's face again, and Scott Hall comes out. All right, this is cool. And then when Hunter comes out, it's like mind blowing, because why is he even coming out? You know, it's like, what's the point of this? And it was incredible that night. And we purposely sat in the 300 sections all the way on top so we wouldn't get caught with the camera, or we wouldn't get it taken away.
He knew I had that figured out. I had that. Can't get too Jason, close with a camera.
That was Jason's idea. No, let's not sit in the 200s. Let's not sit in the 100s. You know, that's where all the lights are. Everybody sees us. He purposely got us tickets for 300s. Let's sit far back. Nowadays, it's different. Like, in the last few years, we were always in the front row. But back then, we purposely went in the back. And, Jay, I want you to tell the story that how everybody thinks we sneaked in or smuggled in the cameras. Why don't you tell them how we really got it in? Because what you tell me all the time is like the actual truth.
Yeah, yeah. But I did want to say about, like Manny said, it wasn't just the cage match, the curtain call that was special that night. The whole event was special. I mean, it felt like a pay-per-view event, and it was a house show, and it was non-televised. And that's what we were like, we were really excited about going. I mean, a Sunday night is a school night, you know. Normally our parents would be like, no, you're not going to New York City, which was like about a little over an hour train ride away. You know, it was a school night. I mean, it was like in May, it was almost the end of the year, finals were coming up. And we really wanted to go, and we're glad that we did. But as going back to with the camera, a lot of people think that the cameras, unlike today, they're, you know, on your cell phone, they're like pocket cams. They're just they're just easy to they're just more, you know, portable. Back then, the VHS cameras generally were bigger. I had a VHS-C camera, which was like half the size, and the little tapes actually fit in like this little shell that you would play in a you would actually play in a regular VHS player. So the camera wasn't that big, it wasn't that heavy. It actually fit in a camera bag, and just enough that I had enough batteries and tape to tape about 2 hours, maybe 2.5 hours of the event. So if Manny remembers, on extended play, the poorer quality, yes, but you
EP,
get more.
Yeah.
You get
six EP, hours you, on, you a, get... on that one. 6, 4, and 2. LP, SP, SLP.
Yeah. I schooled Manny on that, and he was like, he thought I was crazy. And I said, no, you have to pay attention to this stuff, you know, otherwise you're never going to run out of tape. And, yeah, I mean, so that's how I figured out enough battery, enough tape, and we almost didn't capture the curtain call.
Yes, because I was an
almost
idiot.
Didn't capture.
And I was pressuring Jason to film us starting the Scott Hall "You Sold Out" chant because I was so pissed off that he was leaving. And I started this chant, and we were in the 300 section. I'm starting this chant, like, nobody's following. And then after a while, a few people start chanting. It's like, how can you be the one that start the chant and also film the curtain call? It's true. And then finally, the whole crowd started chanting. And I was like, Jay, did you get that? No, he actually cut off the cameras. And I was so upset at him. I'm like, why'd you do that? But he did it for the right reasons. And his mind was somewhere else. He probably said to himself, I got to get this cage match on tape in its entirety. And if it wasn't for that, then maybe he would have gotten the full finish to the match, but he wouldn't have gotten the curtain call, and then we wouldn't be here.
Right. The battery or I would have ran out of tape. It was cutting it pretty close.
Battery or tape. And I'm glad all these times he didn't listen to me.
That's insane. I feel like actually my best friend would appreciate this part of the conversation because she's a photographer and she records things. So I'm pretty sure she would appreciate this entire component about you having a smaller camera and just being able to get that in there. Like, that is amazing.
And you didn't mention how you didn't even mention how you got it in, though. You have to tell them that. How you got the camera in all the time. 6-7 times
and I had it was a small bag, and it was just, I don't know what else I had inside the bag, maybe drinks or food or something, but I was able just, and I remember at the Garden they were like, what's this? And I said, oh, it's just a camera, all right, you know. And there was an incident, like a boxing incident that happened where there was like a riot that broke out, I believe it was like late 95 or early 96. And I remember the security was even more tight at the Garden for events in general. Mm-hmm. So I said, well, they may not, you know, they may not even let us in with this thing. And then what do I do? You know,
But to my recollection, we never planned like, okay, let's hide this camera here. Let's hide this. You got your tapes, hide them here. I remember we just walk in, you had your camera on your side, this and that. Because the security would never think that a 16-17-year-olds would go in and videotape a house show. For what reason they need to?
Right.
You would just open it up, and if they actually asked, you would actually open it and say, oh, it's just a camera. And then they look at it and they let you go, and we just walked in. We never smuggled. We never hid it. We never planned it. We never said, oh, we might get caught. But that was not on our mind. Our mind was, let's go in, enjoy the show, and tape the show.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, now I don't think that would happen, but, or at least here in Birmingham, that would not happen. But basically what you're saying is they just let you in with the camera because they just didn't expect anything bad.
Yeah, we never hid the camera.
That's cool. That is really cool. I know being in Madison Square Garden had to be amazing too. That's like the Mecca of wrestling, right?
Oh yeah.
Oh my God.
Every time it felt like special, you know? And they always put on a good show there, you know, especially the cage matches. Cage matches were rare for house shows. I don't know, and it was just special to go and to see it live, especially the old cage. You know, they don't do those cage matches anymore.
No, not that stuff. Of course. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, maybe one day I'll make it. We'll see. And I'll possibly see Barclays too. Well, you never know. So did you ever expect the footage to reach WWE in any way?
Well, it actually leaked out accidentally to a dirt sheet writer. Well, not accidentally, but
deliberately.
I was upset at, I was upset at Jay, and I leaked it out to
dirt sheet
writer. I made a copy for him, not knowing he was going to screw us over. And then, boom, it airs October of 97 Raw. Not knowing that we're going to see our own footage. Here we are. Oh, wow. It's like, what is this? That's our footage. Why is it doing that? Two things I was upset about. One was the fact that they aired our footage, and I had no knowledge of that it was going to air, and why was this footage stolen. And two, they blocked out our voice. But the other thing I thought about was like, wait a second, why is WWE's quality so bad? Because it's been copied over and over and over and over. And that was the first time it ever aired anywhere. And then years later is when it actually blew up. It never blew up until like the 2000s, later now. And now it's like ridiculous, because nobody mentioned back then, oh, you guys are responsible for taping that. You guys are responsible for Austin 316. You guys are responsible for the Attitude Era. This a Triple H punish this, that. None of that came to light until like a few years ago. I don't take responsibility for that. I think it would have happened anyway. But it's nice to know that people think of that. But the quality of their tape when they aired it, it was like, oh, at least they could have gotten a nice quality tape of it. And speaking of the tape, I might have one right next to me that could be the original. Boom.
Oh, look at that. That is so cool.
These are the regular stickers from the magazines from the 90s. Uh-huh. Because Stephanie, back then, it wasn't considered the curtain call. People didn't call it anything except maybe Farewell to the Click. So yeah. I just called it, and Jason just called it MSG Bootleg, or MSG what would we call it? The Click tape. It's on a VHS tape with other stuff on it. And this tape has only been viewed 3 times to protect its quality.
Uh-huh.
And that's why the tab is ripped off, so it can't be recorded over. But this is the tape, actually.
Oh.
So this is the part that A&E didn't, I guess because of time or whatever, they ended my 1 hour interview into 2 minutes, which is cool still. But they didn't air this part, but here you are seeing this live and in person.
Oh, that's beautiful.
That's the current doll tape.
Yep.
I'm a sucker for nostalgia.
all thanks to Jason. He did this for me.
Wow. That is so cool. So basically, the company didn't necessarily reach out to you guys in any way, you know, after that point back then. But had they reached out to you like years after the fact?
The thing is, I never acknowledged that me and Jason were the guys that filmed the curtain call for many, many years, maybe 10, 15 years or whatever it was, because just I was so upset how it got leaked out. So I never really reached out to WWE or anything like that. It was Jason that I think back in 2014 that reached out to them and said, when they posted the video of the curtain call, that, hey, we were the guys, me and Manny, filmed this footage. That's when the WWE contacted us for the first time in late 2014 for a Click DVD that was coming out. Mm-hmm. Other than that, I would not even tell my friends, like even my close friends, my wrestling friends, the people I did pro wrestling with, anybody. I would just take it out of my mind like it never existed because of the fact of how it leaked. So it bothered me a lot. But now I'm open to it. I talk to all the fans, everybody that messages me every day, and it's nice. It's a nice feeling to know. But the thing is, I always say this, most people think I'm the guy that just filmed the curtain call and that's it, but Jason was the one that actually filmed it. He's the one that brought the camera. I was just tagging along, as you know. It was just so much fun doing those things.
Yeah, and Manny is spot on when he says about, you know, about not getting noticed. I don't think it really, once the video was out there, I don't think anybody really cared who did it, as long as there was a video out there and it didn't really make sense. Who would believe us anyway, you know? Mm-hmm. Back in the late 90s, early 2000s, who would believe us? I mean, they would say, "Art, what's your proof then? What's your proof, you know? Oh, I have a video." Yeah, so do I have a video too, you know? How do I know yours is legit? And, you know, so I was kind of like, man, we just forgot about it. You know, it's already out there, and let it be. And nobody is going to acknowledge us. And in 2014, it was on the website. They interviewed some of the wrestlers, superstars. Sorry, we can't say wrestlers, right, Manny? We got to say,
yes.
We got to say superstars. They superstars. Corrected us once. Yeah. And there was a comment section. I don't know if they do that now, but there was a comment section, and I wrote in, hey, this is me and my friend Manny. We filmed this. If anybody's interested, please contact me. And I didn't think anybody was going to. I thought they would have deleted it, thought of it like a joke or something. And then months later, I got an email on my LinkedIn from a producer. Hey, is this the Jason Cosmides who filmed the curtain call? And I said, wow, this is real, you know? But I didn't understand why they wanted to contact me, because they already had the footage. They already had it on DVDs. They just had a click episode on the Monday Night War series. Mm-hmm. And I thought, if that was our chance, you know, that was it. What else are they going to do? And the guy said, no, we're going to do a DVD. We want to interview you guys. Are you available? And I said, yeah, we're available, you know? And I said, where are you located? I said, I'm in Florida. And he said, all right, well, you're going to be in New York? I said, no, but if you'll fly me up, I'll come up. And he said, no, that's not possible. I said, for real, you know? But anyway, so they interviewed me down here when they were in SmackDown, down here in Florida. And so I did my interview there. Manny did his up in Connecticut. He was able to go to the headquarters and do it there, which was awesome. I'm kind of jealous about that. I wish we were together. That would have been very cool. Now looking back in hindsight, I probably should have flew up, but at the time, you know, wasn't thinking about that. But yeah, that's how we got recognized. Finally, officially, we got recognized. We could say that we're officially recognized by WWE. You know,
and the crazy part of that story is when I first walked into the WWE studios in Stafford, Connecticut, Kieran, the WWE producer, he said, "We've been looking for you guys for a while." I'm like, in my head, you could have found us so easily. We were already on Wikipedia or wherever. I was like, you serious?
Wow.
There's a guy working there that knew who we were.
Of course, because he's the one that played the rib on me on the phone. The time we got arrested with Triple H and Scott Hall. It was actually Scott Hall's idea to get us arrested on backstage on Monday Night Raw, but it actually happened years before with our friend who works with WWE on the phone with me. Told me, you know, since you taped it, you know, WWE is going to send you a lawyer, a lawsuit, because you acknowledged that you were the one that filmed it. I tried to get out of it, and after a while, he's like, "Oh, I'm just ribbing you. It's a joke." I'm like, "Oh man!" After all that,
so, and I guess, like Manny said, I guess that was probably one of the fears we had, is that there might be some legal ramifications. But I think because we were kids, we were under 18. I think we were good. And the fact that they're just using the video, I mean, if they were that bothered by it, why are they using it? You know, I mean, they got that thing all over the, you know, it's all over the place. They love it because they don't have their own, you know,
right.
they turn their cameras off, yes. You know?
Mm-hmm. And normally you would think they would get something like that, but then they didn't. So it's just like, well, it's theirs, you know, let's just use it. And it's cool that it turned out that way. So I can't even, you know, that's just an amazing story how that turned out for you guys. So I want to ask you, do you feel that your footage was sort of the prerequisite for where kayfabe is or isn't in this day and age for wrestling in terms of social media and interviews?
I think it helped break kayfabe and, you know, change the business for forever, as a lot of people like to say. I mean, I can always go with that, even though. But can you imagine this, if this happened, let's say, in the 1960s or the 1970s in professional wrestling? If we were the guys that filmed something like this happening, what would happen is we would get death threats from the promoters. We would be hated by the fans. We would be wanted to be killed by the fans for doing something like this in the 60s and 70s. But since it happened in the 90s, we're like loved all over by everybody.
Yeah.
And most of the comments and everything is positive. Oh, you guys created Attitude Era. You guys created Stone Cold Steve Austin. You guys created this, that. It's like, okay, I'll take it. I mean, everything's positive now, but if it was back then, can you imagine? We wouldn't be alive today. We'd be killed.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, Manny, it's funny that you, that one of the things I wanted to mention, I still didn't finish watching the full Shawn Michaels documentary. I think I'm about halfway. One of the things, and I didn't even know about this, is that the Rockers won the tag team titles. And then they took it away from them.
Yeah,
so, you know, it's kind of, and that was, but it was not televised, but there was people there in the audience that saw that. So what did it say? Oh, it didn't really happen. It's fake news. You know?
Yeah. It's like, it didn't really happen. Even WWE shows it all the time. Now it's like the titles changed that night. They were actually champions. It's kind of like Andre the Giant winning the world title. It's like, he won it for, you know, whatever it was for a day, whatever, so he gave it to DiBiase. Right. They didn't want to acknowledge it. Then they did. And then now it's official that he is. And then it's like the Rockers were actually tag team champions.
Right.
Right. And then it's like the way I feel about it now is just, I feel like what you guys did sort of triggered, you know, how we sort of watch wrestling now in terms of, like we mentioned earlier, with house shows and then with a lot of the stars on social media, you know, sharing, you know, a little bit more of their lives and not really, and basically giving off the impression that who they are is basically sort of separate from who they would be on television. Or sometimes they'll utilize social media to sort of feed into their personality on TV. So I really think that your footage, you know, is a part of that. And I feel like you guys deserve all the credit for that, definitely.
So, thank you. Yeah, I did want to answer. I know I didn't quite answer the question that you had, but do I think it started it? I mean, it definitely kicked it off where it was like, okay, there is some behind the scenes stuff that fans want to know about, you know? But do I think it's becoming too much? Yeah, but that's largely due to the internet and social media, and everybody's a busybody and needs to know, and you know, they say inquiring minds want to know. So I just think that's the world that we live in. Even you've seen in pro sports now, you know, it's like, it's not just, you know, ball players, you know, they just go on and play ball, you know, whether they're whatever sport you are, there's always, oh, they have social media, they're doing this, they're doing that, you know, they're more engaged, you know, it's not just, this is, you're a fictional character on TV and that's it, you know, then you go and live your life. I mean, man, he'll tell you, we saw Cactus Jack Mankind at Sbarro's with his family eating pizza at the Sunrise Mall before he was in, yeah, before he was in WWE, and like, and nobody was, he was just there, he was just chilling with his family, and we went up to him, hey, are you Cactus Jack? He's like, yeah. And we just thought that was so cool, such a real moment. But I think, you know, nowadays everybody would be pulling out their phones and want to take pictures and selfies, and we were just so cool about it with him, right? I mean, I think when his daughter was probably there, I think she's a wrestler now.
Yeah, and the best part of that day is I'll never forget from any wrestler, because, you know, back then it was only dirt sheets and everything. You know, I bluntly asked him, you know, I was 16, whatever it was at the time, I was like, hey, are you ever going to go to WWF? And, you know, he was in ECW at the time. He's like, oh, probably in about a year. Without even hesitating, he told me the truth, because it actually happened almost a year later. Boom, yeah. The promos came in for Mankind. He was so truthful and honest with me, and like, wow. And back then, it's like, oh, really? It's like, I had a wrestling hotline then, and I didn't even tell anybody that, you know? Mm-hmm. It was a nice thing. You know, he's one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. Remember a half hour later, he came to a store that we were at. He's like, hey,
KB Toys. KB Toys, yeah.
Yeah.
I miss that store.
Yes.
I miss that store so much. See, you guys are way better than me, because if I saw Mick Foley anywhere, my face would have just been froze the whole time, like, ah! And I probably would have smiled the whole time and just said, you know, how much I love him, and that's just it. Like, I'm terrible. Sometimes I'm just really terrible when it comes to just saying stuff. It's just like, anything will just come out of my mouth, like, whenever I see somebody like that. It's crazy. So did you guys feel like the clique had every right to sort of embrace each other in that moment, or do you feel that maybe they should have just kept kayfabe alive and just not done that for the sake of television? Because in the biography that Shawn Michaels had this past Sunday, Ric Flair was on there, and he mentioned that if that had happened, just like you did, Manny, if that had happened back then, you know, during his age, during the 60s and 70s, you know, they would have been booed out of the building or possibly killed and all of that. So do you guys feel like they should have embraced, or do you feel that they should not have?
I feel like they should have, and it was done for the right reasons. It never, if you look at it now, it never hurt anybody. It only helped the business, you know, if anything, and helped us.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I would say, I mean, not knowing, obviously now watching the videos and the backstories, and you realize these guys were really close. They were a tight-knit group that was always together, and they knew it was their last day of working with each other, at least at that time. So they wanted to do a send-off. They wanted to say goodbye to everybody. You know, that was it. So, I mean, hey, they asked the boss, and he said do it, you know. Mm-hmm. And they wound up doing it, and you know, more power to them. I just wish those guys, you know, I think back, I just say, you know, I wish one of those guys stayed that year, because WWF went to shit right after for a couple of years. And you know, I would say, if I don't know, I would say I wish Kevin Nash stayed. Scott Hall, he had his issues, but I wish Kevin Nash stayed. And because this, I know I'm going off course here, but at the time, you know, Brett wasn't there around that. He left. He took a little break after WrestleMania 12. Warrior was gone like a few weeks later, and then Scott Hall and Kevin Nash were all gone, you know, by July, and those were four big guys that were gone. And then you had the outside, then you had, you know, the Bash at the Beach when Hogan and they joined the NWO. That just, WCW went through the roof after that. And as a wrestling fan, you're like, wow, they got the edge now, you know, at least for 2 years, you know. But yeah, that was the new generation era at its low point.
Yeah, so essentially them leaving just triggered the Monday Night War and everything that we know about it. I think you're probably the first person who's ever been on my show that called, that basically outright said that WWE really wasn't anything back then, you know, after they had left at that point. But I'm glad you guys feel that way about them embracing, because I felt the same way myself. I was just like, you know, if they were best friends, let them have their moment. Like, let them hug each other. I mean,
you know what?
Gosh.
I always thought, what if the video didn't exist and only those three pictures that the people from ringside or a couple of fans, would it have been as big? I don't know. I don't think so, but I think the video helped.
No. Yeah, it just would have been like one of those, like, urban legends, you know? Some people say it happened. Some people say it didn't happen. And you see nowadays in the news, I mean, video, you have video, it's just so powerful, you know, says so much. And what they did that night was something special. I mean, Manny will tell you, before that, you know, the best moment that I house show was when Diesel won the belt, you know, when he won it at Madison Square Garden against Bob Backlund in like 8 seconds. And And at that time, I thought it was awesome. Looking back now, I thought it was the dumbest idea because it made absolutely no sense from a wrestling storyline point of view, where he went from a bad guy of like a night or two before into a good guy, into world champ. And it's like, there was no build up. There was no build up.
Lex Luger slam. Let's bring Lex Luger out and slam Yoko. Yeah. Same thing.
Yeah, it just made no sense, but I was a mark.
But it was cool. But it was cool, though.
It was cool, unexpected. And then, you know, obviously WWE, they taped it. You know, it was a short match. But Manny got his hands on a bootleg of that event. I was like, wow, you got a bootleg of this, you know? And Manny, the quality was, it was poor. It was like the generational loss. What prompted me to start taping shows is that just buying a lot of these bootlegs from these tape traders that I pay like 20, 25 bucks for of my, you know, my shoveling snow money, which was a lot back then, you know, and it just was just poor quality. It was like, you know what? I can do a better job than this, and I will do a better job than this. You know?
And yes.
You know, just didn't have no idea that I was going to be taping the most memorable wrestling moment of the 90s, you know, or most controversial moment, if you want to, you know.
Okay, so I want to ask you, how has this moment exactly changed your lives for the better in terms of the present?
For me, I actually acknowledge it now. I used to just hide away from it for years. Now it's like pretty much an everyday thing because I get messages all the time. A lot of similar questions, but that's okay too, from fans all over. But I'm okay with it now, you know, everything's good, you know. I'm okay with being known as the current call kid or being the guy that was annoying or was the screaming mark. And, you know, Jay was the guy with the camera going crazy. So I'm okay with it. It's cool.
Yeah, same here. I don't really, it doesn't really change me. I just think it's cool, you know, to just get recognized, you know, something we did as a kid. I mean, if you told us back when at the time, hey, you guys are going to be recognized, you guys will be on DVDs and such and podcasts and all that, I would probably have said, no way, you know, I wouldn't have been able to comprehend it, but, you know, I don't have a presence really on social media. I have just a Facebook page, but I just, you know, it's for family stuff. But it's cool. I read the comments on YouTube. Very interesting comments from fans, and I do reply from time to time. A lot of misconceptions, you know, that people feel. They think we're like, you know, millionaires. They think, you know, they think that. You know, they just think that that WWE bought the rights or something. It's a lot of crazy stuff that people think, but a lot of people don't realize is that legally what we did was wrong, and you know, it just
what about the confiscating comments? They confiscated the tape.
Thought that they confiscated the tape, that they took everything from us, and then you know, but there was once where they did confiscate at a NASA Coliseum. Got a little too close to the ring, thought maybe I can film a little closer to the ring. Mm-hmm. And then like security guard said, they basically said, give me the tape, and I had to give up the tape. But fortunately it was a really weak house show, you know.
Good. I always mess with them. I would say, the reason why they took your tape because I wasn't with you at that one. You brought your other friend.
Yeah. It wasn't looking out for me, you know. But just a lot of cool stuff, you know, a lot of cool comments. And it's just like, I just think it's basically what's happening with everything today, you know. Nostalgia is big. What didn't seem as popular back then is now popular now, because people, especially during the pandemic, they're reminiscing of the good times, you know. And I think that's very important, that we all reflect that, you know, times were good and they will be good again, but we got to get there.
Yes, you know? And WWE Network and Peacock Network is doing great things for as far as documentaries go, keeping people entertained. They're doing a great job. So much love to WWE for what they did for us and what they're doing.
Well, that's pretty good to hear, you know, how it sort of affected your lives. But then it's good that you guys are just have that good relationship, you know, with them because of that event and how, and just how, you know, it's impacted wrestling history even now, because we're still talking about it. And that was 25 years ago today. So that's just a really cool thing. Yeah. Manny's like, whew.
Yeah, but, it's funny you say that, because I think back, I'm like, well, if we were back in the mid-90s and somebody brought up something that happened, you know, 25 years ago, say like in the, you know, early 70s or late, I probably wouldn't have cared. I would have been like, that, you know, what does that have to do with what happens today, you know? Mm-hmm. But it's just different, I think, as we're in this generation now where, you know, things are just fresh with this digital age and things are online. Everything kind of stays fresh, you know, and people's minds. So things kind of live a little bit longer than they used to.
Definitely. So who are some of your favorite wrestlers now, per se? Like male or female?
For me, I would say I've been a big fan of Roman Reigns. I like what he's doing.
Okay. I like Roman Reigns too. I love what he's doing as well. It's really interesting. He's probably the most compelling he's been in like the past couple of years, and I love it so much.
I can't answer that because I don't really watch wrestling. If I say Goldberg, I mean, that's kind of, you know, Oldberg, but you know, he's still wrestling, so I guess, you know, that's but much credit to him. He's still going. But I guess or Brock Lesnar, you know, those guys are still going. That's really it. I'm sorry. I wish I had, you know, what's his name? The Miz. Is he still wrestling?
Yes, he is. He actually just got injured. Okay. So injured for like the very first time. So he's out right now, but he is still wrestling. He's still active.
Good. Yeah, there was a good documentary I was watching the other night on the WWE Network.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, he took a lot of crap on his way up. So he paid his dues, you know, good for him. I didn't realize, because he was on the reality show, the reality, was it The Real World? And then he was on Tough Enough, and then he just was the, oh, you're the Real World guy, you know?
No, he deserves everything he's got. And you watch you watch that WrestleMania 27 main event where he comes out and he fights Cena, even though he loses. That made him a star. He is a star, you know? Nobody can deny that.
And I was at that WrestleMania too. That was in Atlanta.
Very nice.
I know that's the one that everybody kind of critically craps on, but I don't care. I was happy I was there. I was 17. So, you know, forget it. That is my WrestleMania. Forget y'all.
That's your moment. Yeah.
Well, WrestleMania 11 was my memorable, and that gets crapped on as the worst WrestleMania. So, you know.
Oh, really? So, so people crap on that one worse than they crap on 27?
WrestleMania 11 was the worst.
Wow.
Me and Jason went to that one. Mm-hmm. It felt like a house show, and it pretty much was.
Mm.
Yeah.
And that was in Connecticut.
I mean,
it was a bad experience.
They say
for the first WrestleMania.
The main event was Lawrence Taylor against Bam Bam Bigelow, and the winner at the end of the night wasn't even a wrestler.
Wow.
Think about that.
And Bam Bam was the star that night because he deserved everything he got. I mean, it was just.
Well,
and of course, Sean lost. So.
Well, what does the future hold for the both of you?
Yeah, you want to go first?
I hope my cryptocurrency turns around. it's really down right now. But I don't know. We'll see what the future holds. I mean, I thought after the I thought after the we did the DVD, the Click DVD, and then the Raw segment, I thought that was it. I thought that was the end, you know. We did our interview, that's it. Time to move on. It's we already recognized. And then I got a call from a producer last year. He contacted me, wanted to do the interview for the Shawn Michaels DVD. And I talked to him for about an hour, and he did not really know too much. He was an old school wrestling guy, but he wanted to know more about the curtain call and what happened and how we got involved, you know, what was our involvement with the whole recording and all that. And I explained to him, and it was like the height of COVID. It was like the peak of COVID, and he was going to come and interview me. He interviewed Manny, cause he's up north. And unfortunately, due to COVID, we just weren't able to get together. So Manny was able to take the torch. Oh, I don't know what the word is, but
steal the spotlight.
Steal the spotlight. Yeah, and so he did a great job representing the both of us, and interviewed for that. And then I don't know what else the future holds. I mean, if WWE calls us for some special event or something, or maybe they might have a, you know, a real what's the word, like a type of I don't want to say Hall of Fame with if they have like
say that.
memorabilia, you know, maybe we'll have something there, but I don't know. They still have to have a building. I'm sure they'll have a wing of nostalgic stuff, you know. That's why they probably have this show, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. I just wish all this happened, like, you know, not 20 something years later. I wish a lot of it happened sooner when we were younger. But you know what? Hey, it's happening now because the times have changed, you know, and that's great. So count your blessings.
Absolutely, I agree with you 100%. And for me, it's just as far as wrestling or WWE, I mean, I'll still keep doing these podcasts. At first, I was against them. I didn't really want to do them. I told myself that there's no need for me to actually do them. But I said, you know what? Let me do them. They're fun. And I told Jay I'm just going to cancel all of them. But it turned out the other way. Jay talked me into it. And I said, you know what? Yeah, I'll do all of them that were booked for. And probably in about, I don't know, I'm guessing 5 years, there might be a physical WWE museum. So that's probably our next place that we'll wind up in for the tape, obviously. And so looking forward to that.
Okay. Well, Manny and Jason, I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for being on the Hardy Wrestling Podcast.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Yeah, pleasure. Like, thank you guys so much. Like, I'm really honored to talk to you both. So if you can just tell people, you know, where to follow you and where to, you know, find you on social media and just anything that you've got going on and stuff, you may do so now.
Sure. I'm on Facebook, Manny Motadi, MANIMOHTADI. And then I'm also on Instagram as WWE Curtain Call Kit. That's all.
And yeah, like I said, I just have a Facebook page with, you know, my name. If anybody wants to, feel free to reach out to me and message me. I'll be more than happy to reply. And that's really it.
And yes, he's the real Curtain Call Kid, not me. I'm just the annoying guy.
We make a good tag team.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, thank you guys so much for coming on the Hardy Wrestling Podcast. You guys take care.
Thanks, Stephanie.
Thank you, Stephanie. Bye. Take care.
All right. right. So I want to thank Manny and Jason for coming on the Hardy Wrestling Podcast. They definitely did not have to do that. But I'm really happy that they chose to come on and talk to me on the 25th anniversary of them recording the curtain call moment between the Click. They really didn't have to do that, but they did. And I'm really grateful for them for talking to me and showing me and telling us all the stories that they've told us, you know, on this episode. So, if you want to listen to the Hardy Wrestling Podcast, you can listen to me everywhere podcasts are available. That's iHeartRadio, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and even on YouTube, where I have video versions of the interviews, some of the interviews that I've done, and really just the entire audio clips of the episodes there. And you can also follow me on Instagram at Hardy Wrestling Podcast and on Twitter at Hardy Wrestle Pod. And be on the lookout for my newest episode that I'm going to release this weekend with Miss Jen from Miss Thickum's TV on TikTok. So, I hope you're being your best self, and I hope you're being safe because there's still a pandemic going on. And I hope that, you know, in the midst of everything, you're still pushing through and just being the light of the world and not necessarily, you know, contributing to the darkness of the world, because there's so much of that. So, until next time, really until next weekend, this is the Hardy Wrestling Podcast with your girl Stephanie Hardy. And until next time, bye y'all.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.